College holds a mythic place in American culture. But there are stories you won't hear on the campus tours.
The higher-ups are concerned about one thing, and that is avoiding scandal.
I'm Margot Gray. On the new podcast, Campus Files, we cover everything from rigged admissions to the drama of Greek life and student protests. Listen to and follow Campus Files, an Odyssey original podcast, available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
Hey, welcome into the Mark Cox Morning Show. We are happy you're here. Obviously, a lot going on still. We've got Jesse Jane Duff coming up, Tom Ackerman to talk a little bit of sports, and the fact that Mizzou basketball continues to be on a roll. We will get to that. We will not mention the Kentucky game today, Kim. We had a rough outing over the weekend. Sorry to mention that. Somebody asked that on social media earlier. Why aren't you talking about the Kentucky? Well, because it's my show, and I don't want to. Because I'm still heartbroken. So anyway, we'll deal with that. We'll get to Tom Ackerman at the bottom of the hour. But for those of you paying attention, we have a brand new governor, and he has already been very active up in Jefferson City. Listen.
Mike Kehoe put six executive orders into effect immediately. These become state law now, and they do things like bolstering training and funding for local law enforcement.
Yeah, and another thing the governor's talked about is eliminating the state income tax in Missouri. I mean, that's a big one. That's something that many of us have hoped for many years. And we are currently joined by Gary Hollis. Nice to get him on here this morning. Missouri State Director of Americans for Prosperity. And Gary, welcome into the program. How are you?
I'm doing well, Mark. Good morning. Thanks for having me back on.
Yeah, absolutely. Good to have you again. You guys have a rally that you're doing. I know it's not just at the state capitol, but you're going to be traveling around the state, right, to talk to people about this?
Yes, we are. Last time we talked about how we have endorsed HJR 1, HB 100, which is the bill that will ultimately eliminate the Missouri state income tax. And tomorrow we're going to be doing a rally outside of the capitol starting at 9:30. And we're going to be meeting on the steps of the Capitol, and then we're going to be taking constituents into their individual offices of their representatives to meet with them. We're going to be providing lunch for everyone. So it will be a great time. We're going to try to put some pressure on lawmakers to become co-sponsors of this bill. We'd like to see dozens of co-sponsors come forward and people go on record and saying that they are in support of this bill. So it's going to be a great day tomorrow, and we would encourage any of your listeners that are able to come over to Jefferson City and join us. And you can RSVP so we know to look for you on our website, which is afpmissouri.com.
Yeah. You know, I guess as we talk about that, one of the things that I noticed is you referred to, I think, HJR 1. So it's a House joint resolution. This would be something that would be put on the ballot, correct?
Yes, there will be components of it as it's written that would go on the ballot in 2026. And with the it would be a cap on government spending that would tie government spending to inflation. So that will allow for the spending in state government to get under control to allow this to happen. And also it will establish that those thresholds, the benchmarks needed to gradually walk the cap down. Now, I do understand that there could be some changes tomorrow. This bill goes to committee, and there may be some changes to the final bill. But as it's written, that's what it would look like. But there is a possibility there is a more aggressive path forward, which would become a more of a swap. It would become a more immediate tax reduction, but it would be a sales tax swap.
Okay.
So we'll know a little better tomorrow exactly what it looks like.
But what do you think is the most effective way to do that? Because that's what I keep hearing is that you have to make up the income somehow. Like, obviously, you talked about you have to slash spending and do some sort of cap. But that I have to wonder if people are going to be OK with instead just having more of a sales tax than the income tax. I see why that's beneficial for everybody. But I just wonder if that will go over well.
Well, I think it can be done either way. The state of North Carolina is currently almost to 0%, and they're doing the walk-down method. But the thing about the sales tax is that it is very quick, so Missouri families will see relief on their paychecks quicker. And what what expanding the sales tax does is it broadens your tax base. Tourists ultimately pay a lot of your taxes. A lot of people that that collect money under the table, that don't pay any taxes on work that they do, they do buy things. So it broadens your tax base significantly. So I think that either path can work and it has worked. But I think I personally would like to see the immediate path, which would be the swap out.
Sure. Well, Gary, you know, we're talking to Gary Hollis from Americans for Prosperity in Missouri. He's the state director. You know, I'm a big proponent of this, and I really want it to happen. But as I look ahead to this being on the ballot, I'm wondering who the biggest groups are that are going to be lobbying against it. And the people that come to mind for me are going to be, you know, municipal league people or mayors who in their own little fiefdom there have jacked up their local sales tax. And then when the state sales tax goes up again, that's going to be, you know, that's not going to look as good. That's not going to reflect as well on them. Is that the phrase I'm looking for? I mean, I could see a group of elected officials like that being opposed to this idea.
Yeah, I think you're right there, because the thing about income tax that is so insidious is you don't feel it necessarily as much because you never see the money. It comes straight out of your paycheck and you don't realize it. As you know, people around the state are very angry, and rightfully so, about personal property taxes. But why they're more angry about personal property taxes is because they have to pay it at the end of the year. It comes out of their bank account.
Right.
But when you look on average, the average Missourian pays significantly more in state income tax than personal property tax, but they aren't as upset about it because they never see the money. So I do think that being able to see your tax bill every time you go to the store is a good thing, and it will create more accountability in the municipalities, which is needed, because people will say, what is all this money that I'm spending every time I go to the store being spent on?
Yeah. Well, tell us more about the rally tomorrow at the Capitol.
So again, we're going to be meeting at the steps of the Capitol at 9:30. We are partnering with Missouri Tax Relief Now, which is a great organization. They were the primary push behind the senior personal property tax freeze, and they're great partners on this, so they're going to be bringing folks out as well. And again, if you'd like to join us, please go to our website, which is afpmissouri.com, and RSVP. We're also doing our zero income tax tour all around the state. We were just in Washington, Missouri, probably in your listening area, on Friday evening, and we had almost 80 people there. They were asking tough questions and learning more about it. But most of them, when they left, they filled out cards and gave to Senator Ben Brown, said we support the doing away with the Missouri state income tax. So we just encourage you all to get involved. This isn't going to pass without people getting involved. And we've helped people through our website send over 1,400 emails to their legislators. But that's just hopefully the tip of the iceberg. We want thousands more. We want your representatives to hear from you.
Very good. Gary Hollis, thanks for your time, my friend. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Have a great day.
Thanks for the effort. Appreciate that a lot. Coming up, we're going to talk to Jesse Jane Duff. President Trump, as usual, he didn't have much downtime this weekend. He was all over the place. Flew back last night, gave an impromptu news conference when he landed. And boy, is the left mad about the whole idea of tariffs. We'll talk to Jesse Jane when we get back.
We may have short-term some little pain, and people understand that. But long term, the United States has been ripped off by virtually every country in the world. We have deficits with almost every country. Not every country, but almost.
I am hard, but I am fair.
Good morning, motivator.
From now on, you will speak only when spoken to.
Take the hill. We got a long week.
All right, Jesse Jane Duff on the line with us this morning. And well, you know what? Donald Trump's got the whole hornet's nest stirred up again over these tariffs. What do you think, Jesse Jane?
You know, I like that expression. You know, this is what our president is so fabulous at. He will stir the pot and get people to pay attention, whereas before, the cards were never in our hands. Essentially, Canada, Mexico, every other foreign country has been able to take advantage of foreign trade with the United States. And he comes along and takes a wrecking ball to it and says, enough already. Now they have to come to the table and work with President Trump so that there will be negotiations that allow fair trade that benefit all instead of the disadvantage of one. And that is a very simple request. If they want to try to play hardball, they're picking with the wrong guy, because he definitely will lay down the law and those tariffs will impact the products that are going into Canada. And I'm pretty confident they need our products more than we need theirs. We will be and are going to be energy independent, which is one of the fuel sources is Canada, but we will not need their energy. We have ample supply right here in the United States.
I read this morning, and I'm going to have to go back and look at another source, but I did see a map that showed the current pipelines taking oil from the western part of Canada to the eastern part of Canada, right? And that the environmentalists in Canada raised hell and canceled a plan that would have put a pipeline right through the middle of Canada from west to east. So now they have to rely on pipelines that leave Canada and come through the United States to get the oil back up to the eastern side of Canada. So if Trump really wants to play hardball, he can just turn off the pipeline.
Absolutely. And these environmentalists can't get out of their own way. They create an environment that is so difficult that people end up resorting to other sources of energy that are completely unreliable. In fact, one of my friends got into the Department of Energy and he explained it to me. If a energy source is less than 50% effective, it's to not cost worthy, such as your solar, such as your electric vehicles, or your batteries, I should say. All of those also have a detrimental impact upon the environment. These EVs, they are horribly difficult. You cannot dispose of them safely. They are heavy. They're very difficult on the roads, and of course they can't sustain energy. Fossil fuels has been bastardized by many of these environmentalists when in fact it can be one of the cleanest and safest methods of fuel, and our society needs it. So here we are. The United States again has the cards back in their hands instead of placating to all the environmentalists and all these foreign countries the way the Biden-Harris administration had. And I'm sorry, I just drove by a fuel pump last night and I saw that gas was still just under $5 in California. And that will change.
I have to get your take on this horrible, horrible situation with this Black Hawk helicopter and the crash out of Washington, D.C., because they've now named the third soldier who was on that helicopter. And it sounds like it was the helicopter that wasn't going back and forth with air traffic control. What have you heard, or what do you make of this whole situation?
Well, first and foremost, I want to say that it embarrasses me to see how conservatives are quickly trying to unravel the female pilot, trying to suggest because she worked in the White House, because she apparently was a lesbian, all of these other things, and her social media posts had been scrubbed. I would just simply say, why are we going there till we get the information out? You know, we do not know those facts. We do not know if she was actually the pilot. There was a pilot. Maybe she was. She apparently was on the training mission with them. I want to get the facts before I start diminishing the legacy of anybody involved in this. I want to make sure that we do that, because when we get ahead of ourselves, sometimes we embarrass ourselves. And what the Black Hawk helicopter pilot apparently, or the aircraft itself, was doing probably, in fact, should never have been happening during that time of day, which was night, right near the Reagan Airport. There's a lot of culpability going on here where people, a lot of error versus just one person. I want to wait for the facts to come out, because it's really hard on me to watch anybody who's serving this country be completely destroyed by suggesting they had an ulterior motive or it was deliberate. Now, should it come out that it was deliberate or had a motive? I'll be the first to stand up and say this is wrong and protest it and ensure that their name is exposed in such a way. But I see a lot of that going on, and I don't like it when we get ahead of ourselves and destroy the names and reputations of people. Remember what happened in Atlanta with the bomber?
Yes.
When CNN put out the name of the wrong person, and that guy had to fight for his credibility back, and it turned out he had nothing to do with the bomb that happened in the Olympics in Atlanta. I can't remember his name off the top of my head. They made a movie about it and destroyed his life.
Yeah. The critics have said it was President Trump that brought up DEI first. I believe he was referring to problems in the air traffic control system, because Republicans have been complaining about that for a long time. And now many people have jumped to the conclusion that he was talking about the military.
Exactly. And the standard for training is still going to always be the same in the military when it comes to your air traffic, when you're considering the people that have to become these pilots. Those standards don't get modified. They don't get lowered. And people are always going to have, she apparently had only 450 hours of training, while the other had 1,000 and the other had 500. So if she was training, at some point, you all have lower hours than those that are more senior to you. Again, I just want to make sure that people are cognizant of, until we have all the facts and we're looking at the black box, but you're right. The president was pointing out the DEI hiring practices that were going on with the air traffic controllers, the FAA itself, and apparently that was understaffed that evening. They had one air traffic controller in there. They normally drop down to one after 9:30 p.m., and this was prior to 9:30 p.m. Lots of mistakes went around. I dare to say that none happened with the American Airlines flight, though, because they were on their path to land.
Yeah. Jesse Jane, I'm out of time. I appreciate yours as always. Thank you.
Everybody, take the helm. We got a flag on it. Now we can run towards it.
Yes, we can. JesseJaneDuff.com is her website. Always love getting her on here. Former gunnery sergeant, and she tells it like it is. All right, coming up, we are going to talk to Tom Ackerman. He's going to join us in studio, get some more details, maybe his thoughts on the Super Bowl preps, and, of course, the Mizzou Tigers as they continue to win. We'll be back in just a minute.
The great sports mind like Tom Ackerman.
Baseball's really not a hard sport.
It is Anchor Man, not Anchor Lady.
It's like powered by coffee this morning.
Sports, sponsored by McDonald's. Reminding you to round up your total for Ronald McDonald House Charities on your next order.
All right, we've got Tom Ackerman in the house, and good to see you again, Tom. How are you?
Good to see you, buddy. Can I just start with this? Just get it out of the way.
What's that?
How the heck did Cal pull that off? How did he go interrupt?
Could you cut his mic, please?
I mean,
I'm sorry.
That is incredible. Because I didn't get to see the game, so I'm just curious. I just wanted your perspective how that happened.
He came back to Kentucky. He really wanted to stick it to the fans, and he started the three players that played for Kentucky last year, and I think they had a little chip on their shoulder.
Smart on his part.
And they scored a combined 50-some points between them. And they couldn't miss when they shot three-point shots, which they haven't done all season. They're 1-6 in the SEC.
Isn't that incredible?
Sucked in every game.
I know.
And they came in and played like NCAA champs on Saturday night.
It's amazing what sports can do. You know, just a little bit of motivation, whatever that is for you. And for them, it was that to help
their
coach. And, you know, so they get the win. It was that was almost not as disastrous, but almost like, remember when Mike Krzyzewski last home game at Cameron, and you know, this big festive day, and North Carolina comes in there and beats him,
smacks him,
you know. Yeah. But anyway, Kentucky will be fine. I've told you that. Pope's the right guy. He's a very positive guy, which is
hurt.
It's a good thing, but I know that one hurt a little bit.
The only thing that'll make that better is if Arkansas still doesn't make the tournament at the end of the year, which I think they're going to have a tough climb at this point.
They're going to have a very difficult climb. Anyone that wins the SEC tournament, that's almost like winning the national championship at this point. They'll have trouble doing that. I'll tell you, I'm going to give you a dark horse Final Four candidate right now, Missouri. I'm not kidding. Missouri is really, really good. Based on what I saw Saturday, I don't know who stops them if they play like that. I mean, they couldn't miss a shot from the outside. They went to Mississippi State, the 14th ranked team in the country, and they drilled them.
Yes.
88-61. Caleb Grill was making threes from 40 feet away. He was out of his mind. The first shot that he made, you could just see the confidence. And he's like, I'll just shoot it from here and over here and over here. He made six threes. This actually shocked me. And I've been following Mizzou basketball my whole life. It was the biggest margin of victory against a ranked opponent on the road in Missouri history, 27 points. The previous 13-point win at Kansas State in 1956.
Wow.
What? Now, I'm sure they've won a lot of games against ranked opponents on the road by maybe 7, 8, 9 points. But by 27 points, it was a heck of a win. I mean, really, really impressive. Now, Missouri's going to have a big challenge on its hands again at Tennessee on Wednesday.
They're eight, right?
Yeah. But they've already won at Florida. They've won at Florida.
They've proven they can win on the road.
They've won at Mississippi State. They beat Ole Miss, a really good team at home. They lost the game at Texas, but they bounced back from that and won the Ole Miss game. I think Missouri, they got to stay healthy. But the way they play defense, the way they rebound, the way they shoot it, they are like the perfect mix that you need in March Madness. And they'll be a tough matchup for whoever faces them, because when you face, you know, the SEC teams have gotten to know them a little bit.
Right.
But you face Missouri in the NCAA tournament, you've never played them before, you don't know them that well. It could be a real pain for somebody. I think they're dangerous.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And hopefully they keep winning.
They just might.
I'm worried because I went ahead and bought tickets to the Mizzou-Kentucky game on March 8th early in the season, thinking, well, that's the last tune-up before the SEC tournament. It is the last SEC game for both teams before the tournament starts the next week. And now that ought to be a barn burner, and we got to go into Mizzou's home floor and play them. Wow.
It'll be awesome. Yeah. And both are going to be in the tournament. Both will be NCAA tournament teams, and that will be basically for seeding in the SEC tournament. And then we'll see who comes out of that. But I think it's going to be great. Now, you could say all this, and a non-SEC team could go on and win the national championship. Yeah, right. I mean, the team that comes to mind is Duke. They're pretty good. I mean, they're really, really good. But the number one team in the country right now is Auburn, and deservedly so. But you go right down the line, Alabama, Tennessee, Florida, Missouri. I mean, yeah, you name them. There are Kentucky. There are some dangerous teams coming out of the SEC. That Missouri team should be now in that mix.
Yep. SLU going to make the tournament?
You know, they have to win the Atlantic 10 tournament. Yeah. So as it stands right now, no, they are not. They would have to win their conference tournament, and there's no other way around it. I mean, even if they were to run the table at this point, that would be enough maybe to win the regular season conference even, but not enough. You got to win the postseason tournament to get in. Now, they played great last week. Friday they lost to, I think, the best team in the A-10, even though the standings don't show it. Dayton is, if I had to pick one, I would say Dayton's going to win the A-10 tournament and get in. And they showed why. I mean, they were great on Friday against SLU. SLU climbed back. They were down 17. That place was on fire, Mark. I mean, it was such a great place. And they start making their run. They closed it within 2 points in the second half. And I thought the roof was going to come off the building. And then Dayton just did their thing, hit their shots, got their boards, and sealed it 71-63. Before that, SLU beat VCU. Very, very impressive win at home. And SLU plays at UMass tomorrow, and hopefully they can keep it going and try to get back in their winning ways. They've got to figure out how to get Robbie Avila going again. He's been a little frustrated. Teams are doubling him. Teams are pushing him around, and he's not been able to adjust here in the last couple games. We'll see how it turns out.
What do you think about how the Blues are doing? Because they had, that four-game... They had the four-game losing streak, but then they did win.
They won last night. Yeah. They beat Utah 2-1 last night. Kyrou had the tie-breaking goal. Bennington made 24 saves, and they looked fine, but they're just not a great hockey team. I mean, they have to show that they can string together wins. So the non-competitive losses that they had in that four-game losing streak were really bad, and you can't wipe it away with one win at Utah. But, you know, you just got to hope for the best if you're a Blues fan that your team can show some pride and play with some toughness and play a full 60 minutes, which they had not done up until yesterday. I thought yesterday they were pretty good.
Yeah. Carl, do you still have your Real or Fake News quiz accessible to you there?
Yeah, it's right here.
You do. You need to ask Tom Ackerman the question that stumped us about the Super Bowl.
Real or fake, the Super Bowl wasn't actually the Super Bowl for the first couple of games, real or fake?
True. It was not called the Super Bowl for the first couple of games.
Number three was
he told us that was fake.
No, I didn't. Huh?
No, he said it was real.
You didn't ask him the question the way you ask us the question.
Point is, we still missed it.
Well, we did, but you didn't ask us. He's like, ask the question the way you ask us the question.
Has the Super Bowl always been known as the Super Bowl?
And my answer was no, because the first two games weren't technically called the Super Bowl.
That's correct.
And Carl told us we were wrong because they went back and renamed them the Super Bowl afterwards.
Yeah, it was the AFL-NFL championship.
I think it was opposite.
Right.
I think we said that it had been called the Super Bowl, and you said
no.
Yes,
that is correct.
Yeah.
Sorry,
I thought it was a trick question because I knew the first two games were not called the Super Bowl.
That's right. But they are now called Super Bowl 1 and 2.
Yeah. And, you know, and people will... It's going to be talked about all week. Kansas City, first team to win three straight Super Bowls. That is true. They would be the first team to win three straight Super Bowls. But the NFL championship was played long before the Super Bowl, and other teams won it. In fact, the Packers did it a couple times, won three straight. But in the Super Bowl era, The Chiefs would become the first to win three in a row, and they will cement their legacy, Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes. I mean, it's just incredible what they've accomplished together, and they'll go down as one of the great coach quarterback duos ever, right there with Belichick and Brady, and Bill Walsh and Joe Montana. And I mean, it's an incredible accomplishment to be able to do it. Can they beat the Eagles? Sure. Can the Eagles beat them? Absolutely.
Is Patrick Mahomes going to be the new GOAT? Could he take that title? I mean, because think about how young Patrick Mahomes is.
Great question. You're saying better than Brady?
Yeah. Could he surpass him with his age and how young he is right now and how well he's done?
I think you have to add up the number of Super Bowls, and you got to get there to beat Brady. And Brady's numbers are also better than Patrick's. But you're right. He's young. I mean, that's the thing. Patrick could end up the greatest of all time.
Yeah, if he plays for 20 more years till he's 45,
yeah,
right? I mean, yeah. Brady played till he was 44 years old, didn't he?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, he
so,
did.
So, and Mahomes is in his mid-20s?
I think Mahomes
I
can.
I thought he was 30.
Is he 30?
He's a so little closer to 30.
He'd still have 14 years left. He could shatter all those records.
He's 29. He'll be 30
okay.
in September.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But he can do that. I mean, he could play for another decade.
Sure.
Now, he does like to run. He likes to cut it loose every once in a while, but he will. He battles through injuries. That's the thing, though, to watch. Make sure that he stays healthy through his career. But, man, he is a magician. He's still the best quarterback in the league. I mean, you can take these three out of the – he didn't make the Pro Bowl this year. It's Joe Burrow and Josh Allen and Lamar Jackson out of the AFC, not Patrick Mahomes. Mahomes is better than all three of them. Now, they're all great. They all rack up numbers. But Mahomes just wins, makes the plays, gets it done. Kansas City has won these games on defense. I have not made my Super Bowl pick yet. I am still reviewing. But if Kansas City does win it, it'll be because of defense. It'll be because they contained Saquon Barkley and found a way to do that, made them throw the ball, Jalen Hurts and the Eagles' offense throw the ball, and that's the way they will accomplish that win.
Nice.
Yeah.
Tom, thank you. We've kept you late.
You know what? I won't be on with you on Thursday because I'm going to be traveling for college basketball. So let's just make it now.
Okay.
All right. My pick to win the Super Bowl is the Philadelphia Eagles. I think the Eagles are going to surprise everybody, and they're going to ruin the party. As good as the Chiefs are, I think this game will be extremely close. I think it will be somewhat low scoring, but I think the Eagles will find a way to do this with Saquon Barkley, the best player on the field, outside of Mahomes, of course. His ability to break runs, he's going to break one, and it will be the difference in that game. But we'll see. Should be a great game between the two.
One of my listeners just direct messaged me, Rich, and said, Ackerman just condemned Mizzou to a one-and-done NCAA tournament by saying they could go to the Final Four.
That's fine. Funny. That's what you want to think.
You'd be paranoid if you were a Mizzou fan and
I think you should
hope.
Be happy that people are talking about you like they are.
Yeah.
And they're going to rise from 20 up into the teens, and everyone's going to be talking about
Mizzou. You're into the conversation.
That's true. Look, you will look at it either way. You think I cursed them or what? We'll find out in March.
Tom, thanks.
All right.
I appreciate you, my friend. Thank you for that. All right. Coming up, we haven't talked at all about this USAID thing today that Elon Musk claims that we're going to shut it down. And you may be asking yourself, what even is that? We'll talk about it when we come back. Stay tuned.
$50,000 to do, a transgender opera in Colombia. $47,000 to do an LGBTQ trans comic book in Peru. $20,000 a pop to do drag shows in Ecuador. Shall I continue with more examples of where...
This was Brian Mast, the Florida congressman, schooling Margaret Brennan this weekend because Mast and a lot of other people are concentrating on USAID. Now, if you're not familiar with that for some reason, you need to get familiar with it. It is the United States Agency for International Development. What is it? Well, they're the ones responsible for handing out cash around the globe for silly crap like Brian Mast just mentioned. And when you've got globalists like Margaret Brennan, well, she wants to get nasty with him and say, you need to understand that's a very small percentage of the budget. Why would you do this? Listen to this.
You want to authorize purging of State Department personnel? What does that mean exactly?
Well, if you want to take a look at the State Department, where DEI has been a priority over, let's say, diplomacy in many accounts, I can give you hundreds of examples
what
of where they were
do you
authorizing.
Have of that?
Sure, let's list them off. $500,000 to expand atheism in Nepal, $50,000 to do, a transgender opera in Colombia, $47,000 to do an LGBTQ trans comic book in Peru, $20,000 a pop to do drag shows in Ecuador. Shall I continue with more examples of where DEI was the priority?
It certainly seems like there could be a review of things. Foreign aid, as you know, is less than 1% of the entire federal budget. So we're talking small amounts of money by comparison.
We're still talking about tens and tens of billions of dollars.
Yeah. Tens and tens of billions of dollars going to crap that doesn't help a single American citizen. And they're talking about ending this.
What about the supposed $50 million taxpayer dollars that went to pay for condoms in Gaza?
Yeah.
Caroline Levitt said it. And then, of course, all the news outlets like CNN were saying, well, there's no evidence that she provided to back up that claim.
It is. RFK called it a CIA front organization, number one. Number two, it's clearly been used to enrich people at these NGOs all over the place. And not the least of which may be right here within the United States. They need to eliminate that. There needs to be a really good reason if we're spending a dollar on an overseas program, $50, forget $50 million. I mean, for goodness sake, this is going to be part of the conversation as Doge moves ahead. They're all mad at Elon Musk. This is going to be Donald Trump making this decision. Just bear that in mind. That's what's going to be happening. All right, stick around. We're out of time. Of course, you got the Brian Kilmeade Show coming up next. Annie and Mark in a little later today. Have a great Monday. Enjoy the warm weather while it lasts. Because tomorrow we're in for a big change, apparently. We'll see you back here Tuesday morning at 5 a.m.
Get more at 971talk.com.